Simon Ambrose, thank winner you. Of one of the first ever apprentices to happen back in 2007.
Yesterday I was doing like events, sound and light. My background is music, DJing, nightclubs and stuff. I went from that to like holding a multi-million pound property portfolio in my hands.
I mean, if someone said to me, I'm thinking of remortgaging my house to put into Bitcoin, I would say, absolutely don't do it.
I said the same thing for 10 years and I've had egg on my face every
so
year.
So are we the guys? Do you know earlier when you were saying that there's people told you not to buy property and it was too risky?
We're those guys.
Are we those guys?
We're those guys.
Why have you chosen property as your key asset? So sat here with Simon Ambrose, winner of one of the first ever apprentices to happen back in 2007.
Well, I was the very first one on BBC One to have won it.
Wow.
Because it was on BBC Two for a while. It was deemed a documentary.
Do you know what pisses me off about you?
What?
I'll tell you what pisses me off. We look the same kind of age.
Yeah.
But when you won The Apprentice, I was at school.
Yes. I'm older than I look, sadly.
That's mad though, isn't it?
I mean, that's good.
How old are you? 45?
45.
45 years old.
Starting to show it.
So when you won The Apprentice, it was a little bit of a shit prize, wasn't it?
I wouldn't say that. It was a very good prize, but I think it's arguably a better prize, a better program now than it ever has been.
Yeah, but what the prize now is what? £250,000 investment for your business?
On paper, yeah. It's £250,000 that comprises PR help, accounting help, I mean, CEO help. I mean, there's a lot in there.
Yeah. I've spoke to some of the winners, man, and their businesses blew.
Some of them have done really
well.
We had,
what's her name? Sean Gabidon, I think her name is. Yeah. Joseph Valente, some of these guys. Yeah. I know Joseph took a different turn, but they did super good things. When you won The Apprentice, what was the prize?
It was a job.
A job.
I won a job, which is a dubious prize in that sense because you've got to turn up for work every day. I mean, of course, if you're a business owner as you are, you've still got to turn up. But I had to turn up for work. I was at Sir Alan Sugar, as he was known at the time. Now Lord Sugar, I was at his offices every day, working 9 to 5, or obviously sometimes longer hours. But my office was next door to his. I had this amazing opportunity to be sat effectively as close as I could to him in his private office. Mine was a shared office. And it was an amazing experience to work with someone that motivated, that successful, came from nothing to being one of the country's leading, top 0.01% people.
Oh, mate, huge respect. And I think as well, one of the reasons I wanted to chat with you was because you did that job for years.
Yeah.
You've now got your own business, but it's all in property.
Yeah.
So your job was, what was the exact job you're doing for Lord Sugar?
Assistant Estates Manager.
Yeah.
So, what so I was helping run his estate, which is Amsprop Estates Limited. Yeah. I helped him set up his website because he didn't have one at that point for the property side of his business. Still the same website today. It needs a refurb, to be honest. But he was quite revolutionary in the sense, and he always has been. And I give him absolute credit for this because, as you know, property game is very obscure. It's cool, it's very murky. It's very kind of obfuscated. Things are hidden. Things are, first day, it was quite an amazing, after the show ended, I was announced winner. The episode, final episode was broadcast. The next day, turned up for work. And like the first day I was there, they handed me an Excel spreadsheet of all of his portfolio, all the revenues, the debts, the equity, everything. He's like, here you go, study this. And I just couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Yesterday I was doing like events, sound and light. Because my background is music, DJing and nightclubs and stuff, which I'm still in a little bit. But I went from that to like holding a multi-million pound property portfolio in my hands, all the information on all the tenancy agreements, all the rent review dates, passing rent, vacancy, void, do you know what I mean? Everything in like a few pages of Excel.
How much of his money do you reckon comes from property?
None of it comes from property. It ends up in property. He makes all of his money. Well, he also makes money in property, but all of his money, at least up to that point, came from electronics, consumer electronics, Tottenham Football Club. But he's got the Midas touch. So even while I was working there, he set up a new business. He was on holiday in Florida. He walked into a shopping mall. He saw an advertising screen, digital billboard. He was like, well, why don't we have these in Europe? So he took what was technology from the emailer, the phones where you'd be able to send emails through the phones, but you get hit with ads on. He had this 90s kind of email phone thing. Took that technology, put it into digital billboards, started making them in China, put them in BP garages, put them in shopping centres. And now he's got a huge multi-million, in his late 60s, he's at that.
It's incredible. It is. I don't think it's even the Midas touch. I think it's just He just knows what he's doing when it comes
he
to
He just
business.
Knows what he's doing. And he doesn't, he rarely has like a, an off day. And I think, I mean, you've talked about it, consistency and stuff. Mm. Like, he has just, he very rarely has an off day. That's it.
So he makes his money from businesses and then he puts the vast majority of that money strategically into property. And that's where his wealth sits. And that's what you were managing. So what kind of portfolio, what does, because we were talking a bit off camera about how Lord Sugar actually helped me restructure my portfolio. What kind of portfolio does he have? Is it? Is there any residential there? Is it all commercial? What type of commercial? What's the strategy? What
it's
is
mainly
his business
commercial.
Plan?
I mean, you can see the website is still there, amsprop.com.
Oh, I've looked at it.
You can see his entire portfolio commercial.
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah,
there is a few bits and pieces that are outside of it, but that's it. For all intents and purposes, that's it. And he's not afraid to tell anyone. Mm-hmm. This is what I own. If you want to buy it, great. Phone me up. I wouldn't say pathological hatred of estate agents, but he thinks a lot of these guys are getting paid to do nothing, right? You get paid to do nothing. Pick up the phone. I want, you know, 2%, 1%, half, you know. Do you know what I mean?
So that's why he puts his portfolio there. It's not very rare to do that. Most people wouldn't say, like, these are all my commercial properties.
It's not the only reason. I think he genuinely believes in progress, right? He genuinely believes, why is everyone, like, hiding their assets, trying to conceal them? They're trying to cheat people. He's very, very direct. He's very transparent. I mean, he's a lord. He's very, very orthodox in that, in the kind of financial sense. Mm-hmm. There's no fiddling. There's no funny business. He's a very, very straight guy.
He pays a lot of taxes as well.
He's a lot of taxes.
A lot of taxes, which again, he's a lot of rich people. Probably the reason why they're not quite as transparent is because they're doing things that are a little bit.
And I don't blame them, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to pay tax. You don't. No one wants to pay tax.
No, he pays a lot of tax.
No one actually wants to pay tax. He pays it.
Yeah.
You know?
What was the biggest thing you learned in the 3.5 years working for Lord Sugar? What was the, and what are you doing now? And how did it help?
It's a very good question. There's a lot of things I learned. He learned to try and be as ruthlessly efficient with my time, because that is what he's very, very good at.
Yeah.
Like, he will interrupt people when he wants to make a decision, because he doesn't need to hear the whole sentence. He will make a decision very quick and act on it.
Yeah.
He won't think about it. He won't, you know, pontificate.
Yeah.
You know, he'll just get on with it. And there's something to be said for that.
Quick decision making.
Especially in property.
Yeah. You know? You have to be.
You have to be.
Yeah.
Especially you've got interest costs, you know, like bridging loans. Like,
yeah.
You can't afford to sit and wait. You just make a decision and move on.
And if a good deal comes along, you need to move quick.
Yeah.
And I think being ready with cash and being able to move quick on
that helps. But also he has a brand. So, and he's very, very, I think from the Tottenham days, he's tried very hard to protect his brand, because it got attacked when he was manager of Tottenham. And although he turned it around financially, they didn't get the league results that the fans would have wanted, and he doesn't
like people taking pictures of him and posting it as marketing.
Well, that's your experience.
Yeah, he doesn't like that.
I think it's a brand, you know. You want to protect your brand, and you know, if your brand is Coca-Cola, you know, you don't necessarily want, like, Asda. I don't know. You want to have control of your brand. You want to know how people are going to use your brand, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I get it. I get both sides of that, you know.
Yeah, it's complex and nuanced, but I maybe won't go into it here. But I can if you wanted. Do you want to know what happened?
What happened?
So what happened was I met him in 2017.
Yeah.
I paid £4,800 to have a boardroom meeting with him to discuss business plans. And to be fair, he was amazing. Like, he went into everybody's business plan around the room. It was like watching magic happen. He was just like, how can I help you? What should you tell me about your business? And they'd tell. And he'd interrupt them and ask questions and get to the crux of their business. And I was a little bit nervous. And when he came to my business, at the time, I owned 96 houses, which I was really proud of. And I was only about 26, 27 at the time. So when he came to me, I thought, a bit nervous, but I thought, he's going to be well impressed. I'm going to tell him about 96 houses. My goal is to hit 100 by the end of the year. And then I want to hit 1,000 by the time I'm this age. But the first thing he said when I told him I owned 96 houses, he said, residential or commercial? I said, residential. And he went, what on earth would you want to do that for? That's what he said. And basically, what he taught me was, instead of buying loads and loads and loads of houses, instead of growing this way, grow this way and get into different types of deals. And as a result of that, I ended up getting into commercial properties. So now I own hotels. I do commercial to residential, a bit much bigger deals. Sold off a lot of my smaller residential houses. So it was a really good meeting. We had a photo at the end. It was great. But then I talked about the experience and said, oh, you know, Lord Sugar gave me some great business advice. And I had a picture of me and him on the website and that. And I got a letter from his lawyers saying I need to take it down. And then I didn't take it down. And then he made a video about me saying, I don't even know who this guy is. I've never met him, and blah, 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 like this. And then I did a response video and put all the receipts, everything like that, and said, and in my response video, because it was on Channel 4 and it was all talked about, in my response video, I said, everything I learned from Lord Sugar was so good, I put it into a training manual. And if you want to get a copy of it, I paid $5,000 for it, but you can get it for free. Just put sugar in the coupon code and you get free. So I got like 13,000 emails from it. So he probably, I don't know what he thinks of me now. He probably doesn't love me. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he's, knowing him, he's probably forgotten and moves on to the next thing. But yeah, so I've got mad respect for Lord Sugar, but that was a little...
Well, I think you turned a negative into a positive. Oh,
I'd like to think so. I'd like to think if I met him
plus
again.
Plus, you got a few more subscribers. You got
exactly, and I've only ever spoken positively of him. But there was that little blip. But that happened now. That was like 5 years ago now. So I'm sure he's over.
You're on to bigger and better things. Society.
I'm on to bigger and better things. Yeah.
I think the problem is when you're like a leading figure, which he is, in publicly, a lot of people are using his image to promote things, Bitcoin scams, everything.
Oh, well, yeah.
My face has been used to sell Bitcoin.
No, my face
so
has.
So desperate.
And I get impersonators and stuff like that and all kinds of stuff. Yeah. So, no, I do understand it. I think as I've matured over the years.
I think from your point of view, you maybe should have dropped him an email to say, do you mind if I use a picture? But it's great to meet you.
From my point of view at the
time. Great to meet you. Do you mind if I use your picture and keep that dialogue open?
Yeah, that would have been better.
Because then you could, keep chatting.
That would have been better. Yeah, from my point of view at the time, I think I was like, I paid $5,000 to meet you again. But now, I've matured. Yeah.
I think some people you can do that with him. Obviously not.
Yeah,
you
know? I wouldn't mind. If someone came
his brand is worth a lot. I mean, whether he realizes it or not, he's business facing a lot of the time. His brand is worth something to other businesses, also to the consumer, to the public.
Yeah. What happened with you and him? Did you quit? Were you fired?
I worked 3.5 years and I had this itch to get back to what I was doing before, which is events, nightlife. I took on a kind of a passive investment role in a restaurant nightclub that I was involved with. A friend of mine that's quite big in the nightclub and restaurants scene in London, well-known figure, and he offered me something to come in with him. I got involved with him. I wanted to turn my house into flats, is the place I was living in. I remortgaged it. I got this amazing tracker deal, which the rates went down to like near zero.
Yeah.
It's basically free money.
Yeah.
And I just had an itch to do something about it, and I couldn't do both.
Yeah, it's so, fair enough. Yeah. And at the time as well, $100,000 doesn't sound like that much now. But at the time, in 2007, that's probably more like $250,000.
Yeah, and it was great from a mortgage borrowing standpoint.
I can imagine, yeah.
You know, like I refinanced my house. I took a little bit of equity out. I started doing things. I backed myself, as you would say. I started doing things, you know.
Yeah.
Did some property stuff. Did stuff in the nightlife industry. Got involved with commercial property. More like kind of rent to rent and nightlife in commercial property. Took long leases.
That's
did
interesting. Tell me about that, because that I do some of the things.
The East London rave scene basically is what I was in 2010. Took on a big derelict warehouse, 400-500 capacity warehouse, 3,500 square feet. It's massive, and it was totally derelict. No damp, no electricity, no toilets, nothing. Fitted it out, started doing corporate events, private events, stuff for like Vice Magazine, cool, kind of trendy shit, fun stuff. And then, did that for 3 years. And then the building got sold sadly to a property developer. Of course, the building, as I told the owner at the time, is going to sell for 4 times in 2 years after you've sold it. I told him, he's selling it for way too low. Don't sell it. Hold on to it. Get planning at least. Do something.
Yeah.
And I guess that was the first lesson I had, major lesson in property that I had after I left Alan Sugar, which you've been doing these big deals for someone else and you're sitting on a gold mine of your own.
Right.
And some Joe Schmo agent has come along, put two people together, taken a huge cut.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's been sold 18 months later for 4 times. The building got sold for $4 million, right in the middle of Shoreditch. 18 months later, it was refurbed, loft, glass box on the roof. Corner property. Alan Sugar loves corner properties. Commercial property, he's like, corner properties, best frontage, whatever. This was a corner property in Shoreditch and it got sold for literally as I predicted, because I had my GDV hat on, This is what it's going to be worth, done up.
Not 16.
It got sold for 18 million.
What?
4.5.
How much do you reckon they spent though doing the glass?
Not that much.
What?
Not that much. 2 million, 2.5 million.
Why? Did you not try and get an option on it?
This is the kick yourself moment. I was too busy in the basement selling drinks to people, doing lock-ins and stuff.
How much did you spend on it though? If you were doing it as a rent-to-rent only for 3 years.
Well, I operated that. So I was the owner-operator of that venue. I didn't rent to rent that one, but I've done it elsewhere.
Okay.
Take a longer lease.
Okay.
That one we basically got free rent, and we our option was you do it up and you get free rent for 18 months, whatever.
Yeah.
So it wasn't quite 18 months. It was more like 6 months, I think.
When you do rent to rents on commercial properties, have you ever got an option to buy at the end?
No,
that's what I do.
That is the biggest thing.
That's the best.
That's
thing.
The biggest thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't. My life is full of near misses, but that is the biggest thing.
Yeah. So you're just renting it for a.
I was an operator, and I was looking at my day to day cash flow, going, "This is great. Whatever, want to get involved in being the landlord." But really, I was sitting on a gold mine, and I missed it. I missed the gold mine.
Yeah.
And that's the one lesson I can tell to people is when you see something, you see an opportunity, do something about it.
Yeah.
Don't just talk about it and go, that's worth fortunes.
Yeah, hindsight though. We all miss deals, but that's a lot of money. If you'd have bought that yourself, you could have bought that yourself probably even for less than 4 million because he knew you.
It's horrible.
It is horrible.
Yeah.
But you know what? Where did your money come from today?
It's the same thing I was doing before. It's rents, managing properties, Airbnb.
What does your portfolio look like?
It's a mix. It's a mix from, I mean, I also manage properties for other people. So I'm set up as like a private landlord and agent. So yeah. I manage people's longer lets. So
right.
A friend of mine had an empty house, helped him Airbnb it for 4 years.
Nice.
Helped him, helped manage the refurbishment of it. He had quite a big refurbishment project on it. Helped oversee the refurbishment. I also obviously work with builders as well. And I don't project manage myself necessarily, but I have done it. I have project managed stuff. I have done agency work. I've sold properties for people. Last year, I sold a house, seven-figure house, you know, in Southwest London.
Nice. What percentage commission did you charge?
Standard agency fee, really.
2%?
Way less than that.
Was it?
Texas are charging. I don't know how to say. Texas are charging 1%.
Yeah. But still, if you've got like multi-million-pound property.
Yeah. You know, if you've got flow, if you've got deal flow, it's great.
Yeah.
So I've done agency work, but I'm mainly working trying to gear my own portfolio a little bit, trying to take on some more debt. Because the one thing I've been reticent on my whole adult life is I've been afraid to take risk as much as I should, which is a mistake, I think.
You took a risk when you went on The Apprentice?
Yeah, I took a risk. I did it for a dare. And I took a risk when I got a tracker mortgage, but that in itself is not that much. It's not that much of a risk. You know, it's a few percent here and there.
How did you win The Apprentice? Why do you think you won it? You must have something about you for Lord Sugar to be able to not only win The Apprentice when there's, 10, 12 people, but even the application process. I know so many people that went through the application process and didn't get anywhere.
Well,
win it. It's a big deal.
I don't want to give away too much, but I mean, it's simple things, really. I read everything I could possibly read that was available online. I watched every episode I could download, whether it was on YouTube, on SoulSeek or one of these other file sharing sites, whichever episode I could get hold of online, legally, illegally, I downloaded, right? I watched every episode. I watched the American version, Donald Trump going back. Well, it wasn't that old back then, but 2-3 years. I did research about the production company. I researched the people that worked on the production of the program. I found out what they liked. I read a great book by Professor Robert Cialdini called The Art of Influence. Science and Practice.
Mm.
And he worked as a salesman. He was a traveling rep in America selling washing machines, Hoovers, door-to-door stuff. And he worked out what's the way to influence people, how to get people to think how you think, like what you like. And there's stuff in there about, you know, reflecting, mirroring, moving, you know, like mirroring, matching, you know, all kinds of stuff that is in a lot of these psychological books. Tony Robbins' books, Unlimited Power. What's that? Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yeah, classic.
Psychology books, like how to get people to come over to your way of thinking. And actually, like a lot of it is fluff, a lot of it is psychobabble, but a lot of it works, right? Mm. And it doesn't just work when you're applying for a TV show, you know? It works when you're talking to a bank manager. It works when you're talking to an estate agent.
Yeah.
You know, it works in all forms of life, right?
Yeah.
Whether you're selling a house, buying a house, selling yourself, trying to do a deal. So the first house I bought, I actually got gazumped. So I went in there, made friends with the owner, got a personal connection, made an offer, got gazumped. First house I bought was in my early mid-20s. I was like, I called my dad for advice because my dad was helping me advise me. I was only like 23, 24. And he goes, well, if you want it, you go a bit more. And I was like, nah, not doing that. I've got what he hasn't got. I've got personal connection with this person that's selling the house. So that I've got to prey on and use. So I phoned them up. I'd been around to see the family that was selling it. I said, look, I've met you. I've been to see you. I've spent time with you. I don't know about this other guy, but I'm really emotionally invested in this and I can't match it. What can I do to get this house? And she was like, they were like, I'm really sorry, but he's offered 20 grand more, like 30 grand. I think it was 30 grand more. And I was like, okay. And just on the cuff, I was like, I can't match it, but I'll get as close to it as I can. And my limit is X 100, say. I can't go to X 20, but I can get to X 100. And that's as far as I can go because my bankers told me they're not going to lend me any more than that. That money was going to be for refurbishment, for, you know, fixtures and whatever, you know, fitting out, you know, decorating the place. But I know that's my limit and I cannot go any higher. But I can say I will deliver, I will, you know, perform. And, you know, I prayed on the fact that we had this personal relationship.
Yeah.
And then, sure enough, I sat back, went quiet. And I got a phone call a few days later saying, we're going to go with you. Well, my wife's going to go with you because she likes you more.
Wow. That's amazing.
It was like 10 grand in it.
Yeah.
You know?
But you know what, though? That does go to show as well the power of relationships.
Yeah.
And also, not just... And this is a little bit different to what you said, but I often get deals. It's not about the highest price. It's about the strength of the offer.
Yeah, for sure.
If they know that you're going to follow through, yeah. Put your documents in place, if you're able to say, here's my solicitor, here's my this, here's my that, but your offer's less, they might go with you just because you seem like you're a bit more on it.
Well, that's the other thing. I said, look, I've got an offer letter in principle. I can show it to you. I mean, I didn't. I didn't have the offer letter. I had a mortgage kind of agreed, but it wasn't quite in writing. But I said, look, I can deliver this and I can do fast completion as well. I said, if you want, I can exchange tomorrow complete in a month.
Yeah, right.
You know, speed. If you want.
Exactly.
And they were moving out. They were families. They didn't really want that. But I said it to them and offered it to them. I mean, God forbid, you just need to get the deal over
just
the line, right?
You still own the house?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's flats now.
How much you pay for it?
I'm not going to say.
But you made money on it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Loads.
It's flats, yeah, yeah. One of the flats
How much
is worth,
you make on it?
That's 20 odd years ago. It's tripled in value, you know.
There we go.
You know?
What's the worst thing about property? You're in property, you've done selling, you've done rent.
Rising damp.
Yes. Maintenance, basically.
I've dealt with it so many times now.
Should be easy then if you've dealt with it.
No, it's never easy.
Rising damp.
Yeah, I mean, why? It's if it's a small bit over there in the corner, it's easy. But yeah, I'm dealing with it at the moment in a house that's had it for 15 years and it's never gone away.
Do you buy properties that have got problems deliberately to fix them up?
Is that sometimes
kind of your strategy? Buy them, fix them up, refinance them.
Not always, but I just don't see the point overpaying for somebody else's work, for someone else's spec. Do you know what I mean? So you have to start somewhere. The first thing you do when you rent it out, someone says, oh, I don't like grey. Strip it out, you know? And what are you going to do then? I just don't see, there's no upside, there's no value for me in buying something that's fully maxed out, fully
It's already
specced.
Refurbished.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I totally agree.
What's the point?
Yeah, but it's like the ultimate example of that is buying a new build.
Yeah.
He's just going to lose 10% of his value.
I think it makes sense to buy new builds in certain instances. For example, if you've got a help to buy mortgage.
Bro, really?
If you've got that and you're buying it to live in.
Oh, mate, we're going to have to debate this one then.
Well, if
I hate help to buy.
If you're in that position and you want to buy a home and you found someone you like and you're going to live in it, then there's no price you can put on it in that sense. You know what I mean?
There might be very rare exceptions. My attitude on help to buy is, so new build is going to drop. You're borrowing money from the government, you've got to pay it back. You're probably going to end up in negative equity.
Maybe, but you don't know that until you've lived in it. But also, you don't know how your earning profile is going to rise. So if you've got a good job, you just need to have
You can't make an investment on the basis that I might get paid more one day.
Well, no, but you can make an investment on the basis that you might get married one day and you might have a family and this place has got a spare room. And then my wife and I, we have two incomes rather than one. And you don't have to worry about losing your money. It depends. It depends on the asset. It depends what you're, as like anything.
Yeah.
Depends your entry point and your exit point.
Yeah.
Entry point's there and your exit point's there.
Yeah.
You're done.
I generally think though, that government schemes like these lifetime ISAs, help to buy, I'm quite anti that.
I'm quite anti new bills, full stop. Don't get me wrong.
I'm anti new bills as well. Yeah. There might be for the odd person, it works. But I think generally.
I think if you're cash poor and you don't have enough of a deposit, then this is
rent. Start a business.
I completely agree. But if you don't have that, if you have a profession, if you're working in IT, you're working at sales, you know.
Have you got kids?
Two.
How old are they?
Six and one. Nearly two, yeah.
Nice. What's your as a parent then, someone that's been in business, worked with the likes of Lord Sugar, who's a billionaire, you're in property.
Yeah.
What are you thinking about in terms of like business with raising the kids? Are you going to try and get them into business with themselves, or do you want them to come and take over your business? Are you going to teach them about money? Are you going to say, are they going to normal school, private school? Are you homeschooling them? What's the whole?
It's very difficult, and I'm in two minds about all of the above.
But it's complex.
I know one thing is that I'm already kind of asset gathering for them, because I know that, as you know, property is getting further and further out of reach for most people.
It is.
So the quicker you get on this ladder, even when they're born, better for everyone.
We should talk about that tonight. We should talk about the fact that property is getting more and more out of reach. So get in now.
Yeah, I think that's the takeaway.
Yeah.
From my experience at least, I can just 100% say I was so nervous when I bought that first house that we talked about. I was working in the city. I was a stockbroker working at Credit Suisse, First Boston, as it was known. I was an equity. So I was selling European equities to institutional investors worth many, like multiples, obviously, in net worth than I was. And they're listening to my advice, saying buy Vodafone, sell Carphone Warehouse, et cetera, giving them advice. And every one of them I asked, I'm thinking of buying this house. They're like, don't do it. Don't do it. Right. The market's peaked. Don't do it. And these are serious, qualified investment professionals.
Dummies!
Chartered financial analysts. They're like, we're selling everything. We've liquidated all our property. It's all overbought. Yeah, get out of it. Get out of it. And it obviously wasn't. And it kept going. I got laid off. Dot-com boom collapsed. I got laid off. I went back into events that I was doing at university and stuff, and got back into property and so on. And property just kept going.
Yeah. You know? What year was that? Was that like
2002?
Oh, really? That early?
2002.
But property's boomed from 2002 to 2006.
Yeah, and it was peaking then. Like there was articles on the Daily Mail. I remember them. Front page articles saying property slump, crash coming, like doomsday.
Yeah.
It's all over. Dot-com money's collapsed.
Do you know what's
the world's falling apart?
Yeah.
And it just kept going.
Yeah.
And then 2008, and then everyone said the same thing, credit crunch, property's going to collapse.
And it did. It didn't collapse, but it
had a wobble, but then they slashed interest rates. And it just free money,
That's mad. Looking at the graph, because I got in 2008, 2009.
Yeah.
I bought my first house in 2009.
Yeah.
But at the time, it felt like, oh, we're in a massive crash. Everyone was saying, oh, massive crash. But looking back now at the graphs and all the charts, it only really dipped. It didn't go. It might have dropped 15-20%, but within 2-3 years, it boomed.
It was way back, and also there's like, it's like any industry. There's always metamorphoses. So, you know, back then there wasn't so much student accommodation. When I was at university, student accommodation was crummy, crappy, damp.
Yeah.
You know, all this money around then started flowing into student-lets, developments to house students.
Yeah.
You know, student market's obviously grown massively. Probably, as long as the population is growing, property will grow. That's it. Because supply will never meet the demand.
It's true.
That's that.
And as long
economics.
And as long as they keep printing money.
You don't even need to print money.
Well, you don't, but when they print money, here's the thing, when they print money,
you've got more liquidity, it's more inflation.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's the one worrying thing at the moment is that interest rates are high. And actually, they're putting a brake on the money. And it's, for me, it's the maddest, wrongest decision ever.
Why do you think that?
Because all of our inflation is imported at the moment. It's imported oil price inflation.
Mm.
It's imported wage inflation because we don't have as many migrant workers at the moment. Well, we still have net migration of 700,000 a year at the moment, which is crazy. But it's still not enough to meet the number of nurses we need, the number of doctors we need, the number of builders we need. Talk to any builder and say, do you have enough builders? How hard is it to find tradesmen? Hard.
Yeah.
The average age of the average tradesman in property now is going up.
Right.
Many more 50-year-olds and 60-year-olds are doing electrical work, carpentry, plumbing.
Yeah.
Because you don't have the younger people coming through. There physically aren't the younger people doing these courses, apprenticeships, to go into the property market to do the stuff that is needed. It's not there. So as a result, you have ever aging workforce coming back into employment, which is good for them.
Why
carpenter's in his 50s and he's great.
Why do you think that is?
It's because Brexit. Simple. Because we just don't have the flexible labour market anymore. And we have an ageing population. I've had kids in my late 30s, early 40s. Two parents, two kids. Whereas we'd be having children in our 20s, 20 years ago. People are having kids in their 30s and their 40s. So you've got a population that's getting older and older, living longer and longer. The average birth rate at the moment for women in this country is 1.4. So out of a man and a woman, there's 1.4 people replacing them. and it's happening later and later and later. So you've got a demographic which is going like that.
Yeah.
You've got older people getting older, living longer, and less and less.
But that's not
people.
That's not because of Brexit, though, is it?
No, no. That's just the demographic of the UK.
But why is Brexit even? I mean, why would Brexit make people not want to go to get an apprenticeship in carpentry?
That's a separate thing. I'm just saying that there's less people going into the job market every day. Turning 18, there's less and less people turning 18.
Right. And you know what? A statistic that I found recently was from the Office of National Statistics. The average woman to get a job is now 24. And for a man, it's 23.
That's mad, isn't it?
That is mad. Because I left school at 16 and started working straight away.
Fantastic. That's what people should do.
Do you know what the average age is to buy your first house now in the UK?
Oh, it's going to be horrendous. What is it?
What do you reckon?
Late 30s?
37.
Fucking hell. It's awful.
37.
That's just awful, really.
It is. And when they do finally get one at 37, it's on a shitty help to buy scheme, probably. Yeah.
In a new build that's going to have shitloads of problems, a broken, massive service charge for a lift that no one can use.
Going in negative equity because of the fact that it's a new build, they buy it shiny.
And then they'll find out in 5 years that it's some cladding issue.
It's not even helped. I think it's helped to sell. As a developer, we need
I think the government mean well when they do these enterprises. They mean well. They got stamp duty lower for first time buyers. They're trying to help people. They mean well, right? They're trying their best. I don't want to knock the Labour government, the various Tory governments there have been, because they are trying their best. But the reality is, they cannot keep up with market forces. They can't.
So, what do you think the future of money is? I know you were talking about my book earlier. I'm going to get you a copy.
Well, I mean, you talk about... I've looked at it very briefly. You talk about cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a big thing. Maybe not as quickly as, say, some of the other revolutions there has been. Like, there was a lot of... I worked in the city during the dot-com boom. I was there during September 11th, you know, the Twin Towers falling. I saw big swings from peaks to troughs.
Were you in America?
I was in. I lived in America for 6 months, New York City.
Wow!
Right before September 11th, I came back here. I was here when it happened.
Yeah,
I was working in the city and I saw these huge swings, and it was just the world trying to work out what the hell's going on.
Right.
So you had dot-com stuff, and everything went to like billions. Yeah. Companies like Netscape, which was like Internet Explorer and Mark One. Netscape was like before the Firefox, before Google Chrome. There was Netscape. Mm. It was $1 billion, like multi-billion dollar. And it went to zero because everyone realized, actually, we could just do this stuff for free. Just give people Internet Explorer on a CD, you know, or a DVD, you know, and that whole business went to zero. So what I'm saying is that we don't quite know how it's going to change the world, but it will change the world somehow. I just think with crypto, it's going to be a lot slower. I see the merit in contracts and having some kind of verification process for people buying and selling things. So I think there is a place for crypto, for example, in property. I think that it will come to fruition, but it's not happening as quickly as people think it's going to happen.
Do you invest money into cryptocurrencies?
I have a little bit, but not a lot.
Yeah.
And I have friends that have gone into it balls deep, borrowed, took out mortgages to do it.
Oh, no.
It's just insane.
That is insane.
And they're paying really high, eye-watering interest because they're not mortgaging to buy a property. They're mortgaging to take money out.
Like, yeah.
And they're not, you know.
Oh, no, I would never, ever, ever do that.
But, mate, can I tell you something?
Go on.
They're multi-millionaires at the back of it.
Well, potentially, but then it's so high risk.
It is nuts.
It is.
And I'm like, why are you gonna take some profit?
So am I wrong then? Is my thinking, I mean, if someone said to me, I'm thinking of remortgaging my house to put into Bitcoin, I would say, absolutely don't do it.
I said the same thing for 10 years and I've had egg on my face every
year. So are we the guys? Do you know earlier when you were saying that there's people told you not to buy property and it was too risky?
We're those guys.
Are we those guys?
We're those guys.
No, I can't.
We're those guys can't see the wood for the trees.
Maybe. Really? Maybe we are.
And you know what? You know who's like on the other side of this coin?
Go on.
Investment funds, professional institutions. They're setting up funds to invest in this stuff because there's a market for it. And they're like gathering assets from pensions, like where mum and dad like keep their pensions at, say, you know, a British Gas or a British Telecom, whatever their company is. Guess what? Those pension companies have got a small allocation fucking cryptocurrency. So people are in it whether they even know about it.
Oh, man,
if you work for these big companies got a pension scheme, guess what? They've now got allocations putting money into cryptocurrency.
I've got 7 figures in cryptocurrencies. So I have got money in cryptocurrencies.
Right, so you are in it?
No, I'm totally in it. But
I'm not in it that much.
But if it went to zero, I could live with that.
Yeah, well, it depends how you've structured it, I guess. If you're 70% Bitcoin, 20, 30% Ethereum.
It is about that. Yeah, it is about that.
It's not going to go to zero, though.
No, of course it's not. But Bitcoin, but
70% is pretty punchy, though. So you're in it.
Somewhat.
So you're not a naysayer.
No, I'm not a naysayer. But if someone was literally getting into debt to get to invest into Bitcoin, I'd say that was mad.
Is a bit mad. I think it's somewhere to park your money if you've got loads of profit. But the property was somewhere to park your money when you've got loads of profit. And now you're telling people to gear up. And well, you're not saying, but I'm saying everyone says like you have to get a mortgage, you have to gear up. The difference is it's a tax-free asset. If your own home is a tax-free asset.
Yeah.
So you can sell your own home, capital gains tax-free. Whereas right. when you sell Bitcoin, eventually, some of it you're going to get stung for like 30% or whatever it is at the time.
Can you buy Bitcoin through your pension? SAS pension.
We're getting to that point. I don't think we're there yet. I don't think we're there on a SIP-based self-invested pension point yet. But there are people looking at it to set up exchange-traded funds where you put money into you buy a unit of a fund mm-hmm. and the fund invests in a basket of cryptocurrencies. That, I think, is happening. So you potentially, but I don't know.
We'll see.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the relative merits of doing that. Put it that way.
I guess ultimately, study history. Study what you think is going to happen in the future.
I don't know. It's a crapshoot at this point. Cryptocurrency, really.
Cryptocurrency. Well,
how much of a cryptocurrency has been used for genuine transactions versus just speculation? That's my one biggest.
99%, I would guess.
I mean, if it all fell out of bed tomorrow, that's what happened with the .com boom. I mean, if you draw a graph of the vicissitudes, the peaks and the troughs of like the S&P, the FTSE 100, every peak and every trough has got bigger and larger, and they're getting more amplified.
The higher you go, the higher you fall.
Yeah, and the longer it takes. So like .com, I mean, Dutch tulips in the 1880s, people went crazy for tulips from Holland. Little peak, little trough. There's Great Depression, quite a big peak, quite a big trough. The 80s, Black Monday or whatever it was, Black Monday, massive slump. .com, it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Could crypto be a huge, huge tsunami tidal wave about to fall through the floor? It could happen.
Why to end this wonderfully interesting dialogue of all your
might not
you're a pretty smart guy. Why have you chosen property as your key asset class?
Well, at the very worst, as you know, at the very worst comes to the worst, you always live in it, right?
Yeah.
Any deal goes wrong, you can go and live there, stay there, put the heating on, close the blinds, and you're secure. You can't really do that with the S&P
or Bitcoin.
You can't do that with Bitcoin.
Yeah.
You might get really rich, but you've not got somewhere to go home to. That's it.
It's true. And also, I think it's, for me, similar to that point, it's a tangible asset. It will always be valuable. Yeah. Even gold, which has proven the test of time for thousands of years, in a Great Depression, it's actually not really very valuable. It's only worth something because we say it's worth something. Same as fiat money, same as Bitcoin. It's only worth something because we say it's worth something. Property is actually worth something because it's a home for somebody.
Yeah.
So I think it's a great asset, and it's proven the test of time. And you can be creative with it and do things like rent, serviced accommodation, yeah. which we didn't touch on, but hopefully we'll do a part two soon. Simon, pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.